10 are working from home these days, but many folks are risking their health by going to their jobs. Larry Mueller here. Thanks for joining us today on the Ideas Network. We'll talk with our guest about how people on the front line of the COVID-19 pandemic can protect themselves against burnout and dealing with other stresses. Shyla Mergain back with us. She's a distinguished psychologist in the Department of Orthopedics and Rehabilitation at the University of Wisconsin-Madison School of Medicine and Public Health. Maybe you know someone whose work may expose them to the coronavirus. What would you like to know about caring for their mental health? Or maybe you're somebody who is doing that. What questions do you have about dealing with the psychological side of all of this? I hope you'll join in the conversation. The number to call is 1-800-642-1234, 1-800-642-1234, or you can email us. The email address is ideas@wpr.org. And Shyla Mergain, welcome. Great to have you back.
Oh, it's great to be back, Larry. I've been thinking about you and Emily, who's a junior in this time of transition for your own family. So it's great to be back.
Yeah, we are fortunate. Emily's fortunate in that she can, she's online taking her high school classes online. So she's kind of getting through this. But, you know, I was thinking about all the people, certainly the people, the medical people come to mind immediately. But, you know, at my local grocery store, there are folks there who I've come to know just because I go in there pretty often. And that's another example of people who are putting themselves on the line every day. And I kind of consider local heroes.
That's a great way to frame it, these unsung local heroes, and really providing them with some strategies to support them, both that they can use personally as well as friends and family, and just as a community, how do we rally? I was struck that just a few days ago in New York, people were standing out on their balcony and clapped for 2 minutes for all their healthcare workers. And I know what a boost that gave to them. And this is something near and dear to my heart, working at UW Health and having just transitioned to a telehealth practice a little under a week ago, and having to say goodbye to my colleagues I've worked with for 14 years as they're being deployed to the front lines, and not knowing, when will I see them? Will they get sick? And, you know, tell our workers, but it's our grocery store clerks, the delivery service, the postal workers. You know, these, I think, as a society, we're realizing just how vital they are to the functioning of our communities. And there's just so much gratitude for them. However, they're really faced with a lot of stress at this time, and we want them to stay resilient so they can really do their job and stay well in the process.
Yeah. And, you know, burnout, you wonder if actually, what is burnout? How would you define burnout?
And these heroes, our local heroes, are at risk for burnout. That burnout happens when we're in a situation that's prolonged and there's no relief from stress. And as a result, emotional and physical and mental exhaustion can develop when we're in this state of prolonged daily stress and suffering. But we don't want to stay there. We want to really incorporate daily practices to keep ourselves healthy in mind, body, and spirit. I like to distinguish stress from burnout with a frog analogy. Stress happens. You know, sometimes we feel overwhelmed by it, but we can often rally to deal with it like a frog that jumps in a boiling pot of water will quickly jump out and save itself. Burnout is like putting a frog in a pot of water and slowly simmering it to a boil. That frog will just stay there and end up croaking. And so in a way, we really want to stay proactive against getting burnout, because this isn't a sprint. This is a long distance marathon that we're dealing with.
Yeah, it definitely is that. Looks like it's going to be quite a while before things get back to, quote, quote, normal. you wonder if the normal will ever be the same, do you think?
You know, I'm calling it a new normal, at least for the time being. And when we start to recognize that there is a collective grief around the losses, the change in lifestyle, maybe really realizing things we had taken for granted are being stripped away. If we can use it as an opportunity to adapt, to get creative, to really set some goals that help us repurpose, to find meaning in that, then we tend to flow and adapt and start to thrive versus, you know, when we resist, things persist and we start to shut down.
Is there a good way, or is there any good that can come out of a situation like this one that we find ourselves in now?
I feel so grateful to be living in the state of Wisconsin because one of the things I've really witnessed is the rise in community, the ways people are connecting and collaborating and cooperating, showing care and kindness. When we're in these stressful times, one of our stress responses is the fight or flight response. This worked for our ancestors in caveman times. We could flee or fight that saber-toothed tiger, but for COVID-19, that's not adaptive. Instead, we have this other stress response called the tend and befriend response. And when we tend to ourselves, our own well-being, and our family's well-being, and then befriend one another, which is a great thing for community members to do for those people on the front lines, our system stays resilient. So I have seen people connecting with long-lost friends. I've seen family members resolve long-standing disputes. I've seen people get to know their neighbors that they really haven't talked with. And I see over and over again people caring for them, for each other. And I think that's one of the silver linings, that the one thing that the virus can't touch is our innate capacity for kindness and connection and care. And one of the things I like to say is that ideas are contagious. Compassion is contagious. So let's keep our focus there. And it's also when we think about those people who are our heroes on the front lines, if they can also really connect with that sense of caring and compassion and kindness from their community, that's also one of the things that's going to help them stay strong and prevent burnout.
Yeah, I was thinking about what can I do, and I'll use the grocery store example once more. What can I do to sort of support those people who are working in the store? And I haven't come up with much, but I do when I'm getting. I don't go very. You know, you only go a few times to the grocery store. You try and limit those, but I do try to say thanks to the people at the checkout when I'm going through for what they've been doing.
Larry, that's wonderful. And I think something really inspiring to the listeners that, you know, take that pause, look the clerk in the face and say, thank you. You know, thank you for working. Thank you for what you're doing. I often use the word hero, your hero during this time. There was some news coverage of kids holding thank you signs out on a stick for the garbage service collectors. So they had to be 6 feet away and they made these signs, thank you. You know, if you know somebody in healthcare, if you, you know somebody who's in the food service, maybe doing delivery of food, you know, anyone that's really helping support the community, use it as an opportunity to express gratitude. Those little things, those little small acts of kindness go a long way in really helping people kind of feel supported, and it kind of fills them up because it's the antidote to all the stress and negative that we're bombarded with every day.
Shyla Merguain, our guest today, and she's going to be with us right up till 12:30. We're talking with her kind of about mental health, helping those on the front line, but also helping yourself. And I hope you'll join in as we move along today. Number to call is 1-800-642-1234. Email us at ideas@wpr.org. WPR produced an article last week written by Shyla, and we have that up on our website. Go to wpr.org/Larry, and you can we'll have a link there to it. We'll take a quick look at the news and weather, and then we'll be back with our guest, Shyla Merguain. I'm Larry Mueller. Larry Mueller here. Thanks for joining us today on the Ideas Network. We're talking about the the mental effects of COVID-19 with our guest, Shyla Merghain. She's a distinguished psychologist in the Department of Orthopedics and Rehabilitation at the University of Wisconsin-Madison School of Medicine and Public Health. Speaker, writer, facilitator, and therapist, she comes on our program many times to talk with us, and always great to have her come by. So what do you want to know about dealing with stress? What's helped you deal with this crisis? Love to hear from you. What experiences have you had that you want to share with us? Love to hear from those about those as well. Give a call. The number is 1-800-642-1234, or you can email us at ideas@wpr.org. Love to hear from you. And Shyla, we have a caller online, Reggie from Oshkosh, with an experience to share. Reggie, thank you very much for calling.
Hi, thanks for having me on. I just wanted to, you know, thank the people that have been supporting the local truckers. You know, I run from the Oshkosh area down to Chicago and back every day. And I see signs on overpasses thanking truckers, and you know, on some back roads, there'll be people handing out free lunch for truckers and things like that. And, you know, it really means a lot, especially with, you know, access to public facilities being closed down for us and not a lot of food to eat available where we can get into it. It's a really big deal, and it really makes my day, that's for sure.
Oh, Reggie, thank you so much for calling. You know, that's something I hadn't thought about. You know, truckers on the road, and where do you get your food? Shyla, comment.
Yeah, Reggie, thanks for sharing that personal story. And I think it will inspire others to do something similar. You know, I think about the time of we all have our own unique part to help. You know, we want to stay in our own lane of what we have to offer. But, you know, it just warms my heart to think about you being supported in that way, whether it's a sign, you see a billboard sign that's been converted to a thank you, or somebody making a sandwich for you so you don't have to go hungry. And yeah, the truckers are really on the front lines, and we are so appreciative as a nation for all that they're doing so we can have the supplies to stay safe and healthy in our own homes.
Yeah, and as you know, as he was talking, I was thinking, well, what a, you know, it's personal contact in a way, isn't it? Well, it is actually when you're handing over sandwiches, but I mean, that personal contact obviously means a lot to Reggie and probably every other driver out there.
It is. And, you know, one of the challenges that we're all facing with the Safer at Home Act is we're not getting those micro boosts of those normal everyday interactions with people. You know, if you think about just walking into the grocery store and having an encounter with a stranger in your workplace, some chit chat over the lunch hour in the break room, that actually boosts our mood. And many of us are becoming more, you know, we're feeling more isolated. We're maybe experiencing more stress and lower mood. So one of the best ways we can do that is, number one, finding other ways of connecting, whether it's holding a sign or creating a virtual chat with some friends or sending a text. But the other way to get those micro boosts are just in small goals of achievement. If we can set a daily goal of what's one thing I can do today to help, what's one thing I can do today to take my care of my own well-being, how might I be of service, you know? And again, if we collectively all do those small things, it's really going to help keep those people on the front line supported. And, you know, just that little bit of care gives them, I say, high-octane fuel to keep doing what they need to be doing going forward.
There are so many things that we can talk about during this. I think there's such a sense of loss. Sometimes feeling guilty because you feel grief for something that may not necessarily feel that be that important or seem that important. We can be hard on ourselves.
Never before in our lifetime have we experienced such a sense of collective grief. You know, we're experiencing it on the micro and macro level. And one of the ways this shows up is anticipating future scenarios of doom and gloom or catastrophizing. And if we can label it, you know, this is grief, then we can start to tame it and get back in control. You know, there are a lot of stages of grief. We go through that disbelief or denial. That's one of the first stages. Then we can go through anger, you know, oh, I don't want to be safer at home. I want to be able to go out in the world. Then we can go through bargaining. You know, if I just social distance for 2 weeks, it'll be over with. Then we can go into depression. And finally, acceptance. But there's an author, David Kessler, who I did some training with about 6 months ago, and he talked that there's actually a sixth stage of grief, and that is finding meaning. You know, it's the light in the darkness. And I go back to people on the front lines, one of the ways to help that burnout is to really, really sense that meaning, you know, that you have for all of us, that the acts you're taking, the ways you're showing up from work, make a difference. And then when I think about the larger community, again, what is your light? What is the thing that you can turn from a spark into a flame to signal some hope for others or make that difference or even get creative? I've seen people in our state transition their businesses into developing personal protective equipment. So people are really getting creative about ways to meet some of the shortages in supplies. And when we face that, then I think we start to grow. And there's a term called post-traumatic growth. When we all go through something traumatic, about 70% of people experience positive psychological growth. And I think we can say, you know, we can shut down by this, we can become victimized by this, or we can really use this difficulty as a way to have a deeper sense of purpose, a greater appreciation for life, for our loved ones, and an increased capacity and desire to work towards that greater good. And I think that's that silver lining that we all need to hold on to.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, we have a caller, Rana, from Cameron, Wisconsin. Let's go there. Rana, thank you so much for calling.
Thank you, Larry, and good morning to your guest. I'm really excited to share this because it's super easy to do. This morning I was watching our pastor had the little 3-minute daily prayer for us. And he's like in his 30s and he looks like he's aged so much. And I thought, I got to do something to pep this guy up. So we're starting a card party. And so what that means is all the different small groups we have in our church have been notified and people are just going to start bombarding him with cards, happy, thankful, whatever you have in your heart kind of cards. From now until the end of April, and just to try and lift his spirits up and let him know that, hey, you know what, we see you and we are out here for you and we care about you. And I've done it before and with tremendous success. So just sharing an idea that is easy to move forward.
Oh, Rana, thank you so much. That sounds like such a wonderful idea. And there are probably many, many, many churchgoers who are listening in and saying, you know, that's something I could do. Shiloh, comment.
Bombardment with cards. That's brilliant. Yeah, and I think about, you know, people who are on the front lines trying to be of service. One of the ways that they can stay resilient is in noticing the good, you know, bringing in those positives. And so getting a card in the mail could just be that list that they need. And when we think about people on the front lines, you know, if there's considerable stress, you're a healthcare worker dealing with people who are being tested for COVID-19, or maybe you're working in the emergency department dealing with crises, or think of our grocery store clerks having to check out person after person, not knowing if they're a carrier, there's considerable stress. So it's so important when you come home to decompress, to do some things that are positive. You know, family members of loved ones who are on the front lines, maybe give them some slack, stay patient, give them a little space just to kind of shake off the events of the day. And anything positive we can do, anything for laughter or joy or appreciation, is going to infuse us with some of those positive emotions that I think we're really deeply needed, both individually and as a society.
And I think it's, you know, it becomes, it adds a little bit if you have a loved one who is going through this and helping them, you know, and you might not think they need help, but what should we do if, even if you don't think they need help?
Yeah, that's really a great point. You know, one, you know your loved one the best, so be their barometer for how they're doing with stress. And then really encourage them to engage in self-care. I think those on the front lines, it's so important to do some mindfulness during the workday, just to pause and bring yourself in the moment. One of my simplest practices I like to prescribe are the three P's, to pause, presence, and proceed. So you press the pause button. You can imagine a grocery store clerk doing this in between customers, or a physician or nurse when they're walking through the threshold to the next patient, to the threshold of the doorway to the next patient. So you pause, then you simply presence with your breath, your body, feeling your feet on the ground, and then you proceed with intention. And that also can be a really important practice as people on the front lines are coming home. They're going to need that pause to just release the stress of the day and then fully arrive with their family. So maybe they need to go take a shower. Maybe they need to go change their clothes. Maybe they need to take a little walk outside. Maybe they just need to zone out for a while watching a TV show. But give them that space of transition. And then lastly, it's really important to metabolize what we're going through. We don't want the stress of the day to kind of stay stuck in us. And so simple practices of clearing the stress of the day, clearing emotions, like we talked about, grief, allow that loved one to vent. You know, if you're on the front lines, vent with your family. You might vent with coworkers. I did this last week with my parents. I just kind of vented and cried, and then I felt so much better. And, you know, if you don't have anyone, maybe you're single and you don't have somebody to vent, you might even consider some journaling. Both people on the front lines and just us directly, a few minutes of journaling gets the emotions and the thoughts out of our head onto the paper so we can make sense of it. And it just clears that out of us so we can restore that sense of peace and balance, optimism and hope. So I think those two things are really important. The mindfulness, you know, clearing or metabolizing what we're going through. And then lastly, maybe even some goal setting, having some fun, working on some fun projects together. Maybe you're developing a hobby. Maybe you're watching some funny YouTube videos. Maybe you're learning a language or doing something creative together. Any kind of healthy distraction like that is a lifeline for us going through this.
You know, Peter in La Crosse has something that kind of, I think, relates to what you've been talking about here for sure. Peter, hi. Thank you for calling.
Hi, Larry. Thank you for this program. I am a driver for an elderly nutrition program, and every day we go out and deliver meals to homebounds and shut-ins, and most of the drivers are retired in our mid-60s and early 70s. And when I get home, I'm so keyed up and so scared of this virus, I write poetry. And I write about nature and about birds and about walking my dog. And then I wait for the next shift to come up, and I get kind of keyed up and worried again, and then I just kind of go through the same process. And I might just add, I think most of the meal delivery programs are similar to this. If there's young, healthy people that are available right now, try volunteering and take some of the pressure off of some of us old people. I think we've lost about a third of our drivers because of the virus. They're waiting until after the virus is over to come back. So anyway, just my two cents worth. I'm going to hang up and listen.
Yeah, Peter, thank you so much for calling. Shiloh, some good things to talk about there, I think.
Well, Peter, I was so moved as you were sharing. Thank you to you and your team for delivering those nutritious meals to people who need it. And, you know, there is a lot of fear. This is an invisible enemy, so to speak. So we never know what moment we could be in contact with somebody. So really, really, we tap into a sense of vulnerability. And what I think your example of turning to poetry really highlights is that we want to focus on those things we can control, right? There's a lot we can't control, but there's a lot we can control. And the biggest control we have is to focus our minds on something that feels maybe inspiring, maybe entertaining, something that provides meaning. So we have that, we can choose our response. And so actively seeking out something when you come home then puts the fear in its rightful place. It's there, but it can't touch that, again, that innate capacity you have to choose kind of how you're going to spend your evening. And better to spend the evening reading beautiful poetry than spending the evening kind of focusing on the what might happen in the future that may never come to pass. So, yes, yeah. Poetry is great. And hopefully you're writing some poetry too, Peter. I bet you would have a lot to write about this period of time in your life.
Yeah, I think he said he was writing poetry as well. So,
oh, wonderful. Thank you. Yeah.
As he was,
maybe that's something you'll share, Peter, with others.
Yeah, as he was talking about that, I was thinking about Facebook, where a couple of friends I have on Facebook have been writing poetry and posting it. And it's quite beautiful, and it's quite probably great for them and great for any of us who are reading it to read. We have
absolutely.
Mary in Pewaukee has something for us next. Let's go there. Hi, Mary.
Hi, glad to be on. And one way we all can help in a very safe way, whether you think so or not, is to give blood. You can go to Versiti, Versiti.org, and you can look up where a donation facility is in your area, and you'll feel like a hero. You're helping someone. You may be saving a life, and do your part.
Giving blood. Shiloh, a comment.
Oh, Mary, thanks for saying that. A good friend of mine in California just did that yesterday because there's a blood shortage. And yes, you might be saving a life there. Absolutely. And again, we can all be heroes in our own way during this time. I think there is that pervasive anxiety and fear for the future. And many people are losing their jobs and having to turn to unemployment, and that can create a lot of strain on people. I think, one other thing that I think is really important to remember is that this is a temporary state. Although we're in a new normal, it's not going to last forever. And as a species, we've gone through a heck of a lot worse over the lifetime from, our ancestors. And so, this is survivable. We will get through this, and maybe something will get strengthened in us through that. And so I think, again, when we focus on in the moment, what can I do today? Is there something productive I can do today, tomorrow, taking it one day at a time? That's going to help us get through. And especially for those people on the front lines, just take it day by day, and you're so appreciated what you're doing.
Yeah, I think it's so hard for people to think, a lot of times you want to think ahead. Okay, what's going to happen? Now I've lost money and I'm out of a job. How am I going to pay for schooling next year or whatever it is? That looking ahead can be debilitating sometimes.
It really can, and fear can grip us in that way where we start to shut down and we start to avoid and we're not thinking the most clearly at that time. And we're fortunate in our state and the federal government has provided unemployment unemployment assistance for people who, have or are out of work. And, once we get back to businesses open, so many people are going to be back to their jobs. So I've seen people get creative of finding other forms of income or even just asking for help from neighbors or loved ones. And certainly that stimulus check is going to provide some security for people in the next month or two.
Bill in Barnes, Wisconsin, we'll give you a chance now. Thank you for calling.
Good morning, Larry, and thank you for the program again. I don't have much stress in this crisis. My job's not at risk. My health insurance isn't tied to my job. And I've got a little money in the bank to coast. But a lot of these people that we're recognizing as essential and heroic in what they're doing aren't in that position. We don't pay those jobs very well. They often don't have health insurance. And if they do, and if they lose their job, they lose their insurance. And I think it's a time for us to reflect a little on how we've organized our society, that these people that now we recognize as essential need to be paid and have benefits as if they were essential all the time, because they are essential. Next month and last month and next year, we're going to need these folks.
Bill, thank you so much. Shiloh, comment.
Oh, Bill, you know, thank you for that. And that was something I was thinking in preparing for this, that there may be an opportunity to, as we really, really sense the essential nature of these folks who are on the front lines, to maybe pay them a more adequate wage that really reflects the service that they're providing. So, yes, keep holding that thought.
So in 30 seconds or so, Shiloh, last words of wisdom for everybody.
Yeah, I think I would just encourage people to hold on to a sense of hope, to do your part, to really show up with love and compassion and kindness for your family members, for your coworkers, for your community. And we know that love is stronger than fear. So, you know, love for yourself, love for others, love for the community. And that when we start to tap into that innate capacity for love, something starts to happen. Fear recedes, and we start to tap into our creativity that we can use to really do our part in solving this pandemic.
Shiloh, thank you so much. We'll look forward to another visit. Thank you again for being with us today.
It was such an honor. Thank you, Larry.
Shiloh Merghain, distinguished psychologist in the Department of Orthopedics and Rehabilitation at the UW-Madison School of Medicine and Public Health. Great to have her with us, and we'll have her back. Just looking ahead, tomorrow at this time, Scott Craven will be back to update us on what wildlife we can see right now. He's also going to talk about what he's doing during these strange times, terrible times in some ways. In the out of doors. So I'm looking forward to talking with him about that. In the meantime, I hope you'll stay with us. There's lots more in store right through the afternoon on the Ideas Network. I'm Larry Mueller, and thank you for listening, and be well.